A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sim. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 164. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are talking about the Doombolt Chase. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, the Doombolt Chase, a classic bit of children's adventure television. It's from the 1970s. We've been watching 6 episodes. They're about 25 minutes long. And this was broadcast on ITV's network. It was made by the HTV sort of branch of ITV and broadcast in 1978.
And it has a fun mix of naval action and various things on small boats and the like, and code breaking, and some rather likable teenage heroes.
Yes, they are, as we'll find out as we go along. They're quite fun to sort of go on this adventure with. So we'll get to the setup, as we always do. And right at the start, we see Commander David Wheeler in charge of a naval vessel, which is patrolling the British Channel off the English coast. And things seem to be going all very smoothly when they receive a strange coded message. And as a result, the commander makes his ship perform a very risky maneuver, which then results in them ramming a small fishing craft. So the sort of very start, we're off with this unusual incident at sea, at night, things going wrong. And it sort of takes off from there, Brian.
Yes, it's a very dramatic moment and sort of like a confused kind of thing. We don't know exactly why things are happening as they are and so on. And Commander David Wheeler is then put on court-martial for his actions, you know, against this civilian vessel. And we are then introduced to the commander's teenage son and a couple of his son's friends. And these three young people go and decide to act on this and to investigate what's happening and why, to try to figure things out and to try to clear his father's name in this incident.
That's right, yes. So we're off and running with our adventure series and our mystery, and we've already started with our characters, but we'll run through them. As we've said, we have Commander David Wheeler, played by Donald Burton, clearly an upstanding naval officer with a previously impeccable record. And so this odd decision that he made while in charge of his vessel is what sort of drives the court-martial. And his silence about it raises suspicions and I think sort of sets his son off on this idea that there's something more to this than meets the eye. And we should mention his friend, Commander Geoffrey Vallance, another naval officer. Interestingly, played by the actor Frederick Jaeger, who we probably best know as K-9's creator, Professor Marius, in the Invisible Enemy story.
Oh, yes.
And as I say, he is Commander Wheeler's friend, but he's also his defending counsel at the court-martial, trying to defend his friend and account for this sort of strange, unusual behavior.
Yes, the dynamic between the two of them raises a lot of questions for us, because we don't understand why Wheeler is acting how he's acting and not trying to defend himself more vigorously. And his friend Geoffrey Vallance is definitely trying to defend him in this process. And we simply don't understand what the story is here. And it's clear that even his close friend and defending counsel doesn't really know what's going on. Captain Hatfield was played by Peter Vaughn, who has been in many things. We certainly saw him in A Warning to the Curious, the M.R. James adaptation. And more recently, he's in Game of Thrones these days. And he is the presiding officer over the court-martial, and he is sort of very much involved in how things are going with this. And again, we don't understand why he is making the decisions that he is making in some cases. It's something that develops over the course of it, for sure.
And then, as you say, Peter Vaughan, great actor. Fantastic to see him here. He's a very sort of heavyweight actor, so he's really sort of adding quite a bit of substance to the show. And over the years, he's been in just about everything. And of course, as you say, he's our Game of Thrones reference, which is where all British character actors now seem to turn up.
Indeed. And he is always very good, and he was good in this as well, of course. Richard Wheeler, played by Andrew Ashby, is David Wheeler's son, and he's determined to prove his father's innocence, even if it means getting himself into trouble and going off and trying to figure out what is happening. And he's sort of a fun character and, you know, sort of an interesting way into this story and sort of part of how we gradually find out what is going on.
Yeah, that's right. As we've said, his father, David Wheeler, is surprisingly silent, and his son, Richard, convinced of his father's innocence, so he knows there's something up. And he knows that he's going to have to get involved and sort it out himself. And he's joined by the other two members of this sort of teenage trio, the first of which is Pete, his friend, played by the actor Richard Willis. Pete is a junior seaman himself, and he was actually on board the ship at the time of the collision. And he's an excellent sailor in his own right, which will come in very useful when the three teens start taking to small vessels, small boats themselves. So he's quite useful to have on board. And as we noted, the actor Richard Willis, he seems to have been the one of the three leads who went on to have a bit of a career afterwards. And a couple of years after this, he would turn up in Doctor Who as a character Varsh in another Fourth Doctor story, Full Circle.
Yes, that's sort of a late Fourth Doctor show in the E-Space trilogy. It introduces Adric as a character.
Okay, and then the last member of our crew, Lucy, played by Shelley Crowhurst, another one of their friends who joins their adventure. And unlike Pete, she's not so used to boats and messing around in boats, but she's very good on horseback. We get the impression that she's a farm girl, and her sort of skill with horses will come in useful as the series goes on.
Yes, the three young people are all pretty bright and pretty competent. And I think a show like this sort of succeeds or fails based on how convincing and charismatic the young actors who are so central are in it. And in this case, I think they did pretty well with this group of kids in this show.
Yes, I'd agree. You know, three good leads, likable characters, all with their own skills and competencies. And yeah, I think sort of engaging leads for the intended young teenage audience.
Absolutely. So we should get into a little bit more of the story. The Navy have sent someone to go and watch over Richard because, you know, his father, who was on court-martial, asked that they send someone to go and look after him. But of course, Richard wants none of this. He wants to go off on his dad's small boat and investigate what's going on. So very early on, Richard and Pete and Lucy manage to evade the guy who was sent by the Navy and sneak off in this boat, and they're off on their adventure, which will be central to what's going on. And of course, they rely on Pete's skills as a sailor while they're on the water. And they manage to sneak into a restricted naval zone where they're not supposed to be, but it's known they, you know, they're sort of aware that this restricted area has something to do with what's going on and why Commander Wheeler is on court-martial.
Yeah, as you say, that's right. He takes them into this restricted area, and we know that it's central to the whole mystery of what happened. And they find an apparently abandoned fishing vessel. So this is another strange craft. And they get on board and discover some very strange equipment on there. And this sets them on the trail of a former naval intelligence officer and a code expert. The three of them know they've now got to move on from this sort of small boats adventure back on land and trying to track down this chap who seems to be at the key to the codes that are involved in this mystery.
Yes, Richard recognizes something with the code, so he knows from that they have to track down Hugh Spencer, who they do find. Hugh Spencer, he's played by John Woodnutt of Doctor Who fame and also Children of the Stones. He's done lots of things. And they find Spencer is missing and not in his house, and signs of a struggle in his house. No one seems to know where he is.
Yeah, it's sort of classic mystery adventure setting. You know, they find the abandoned house. Something's gone on there. At this point, the three children or the three teen leads are only sort of just one step ahead of naval security themselves. And in the house, there's as well as signs of a struggle, there is blood, and they find this mysterious word, Doombolt, in some papers there. And we get our first clue as to what the title of this program means, that there is a mystery called Doombolt, or to do with something called Doombolt, and that's what they've got to track down.
Yes, and we certainly get into the idea that they're now following the clues to find out what's going on, and these codes and ciphers are starting to become a little bit important as well, and we're off on this sort of adventure and mystery, which is, I think, quite fun.
Yes, that's right.
There's no need, Dad.
I want you away from me.
Look what happened. Not even with me?
No.
You've been in the Navy all your life.
People make mistakes.
Not you. Not that sort of mistake.
I'm not infallible.
You didn't do it on purpose, then?
No.
Then it was an accident, and they've no right to hold you here.
It's very complicated.
I don't want to leave here. I'm all the family you've got. You might need me.
No.
No.
So getting into our production notes, the information on the production that we have is a little bit sketchy, but we can certainly say some things about it. It was written by Don Haughton, who was known as a writer for Hammer films, several of the vampire films, and he also wrote for Doctor Who. He wrote Inferno and Mind of Evil in the early 70s, both successful stories for sure. And he also actually co-wrote the fifth story of Sapphire and Steel, one of the few writers to come in to write for Sapphire and Steel.
Okay, and then we've got the HTV company. This is back again when ITV was split up into its regional smaller companies who would do their own productions, and then they would be broadcast over most or all of the ITV network. So HTV in the 70s had got a reputation for creating several of this sort of exciting action adventure stories for children and teenagers. there's shows that are being released on DVD and that we are sort of getting to. So some we could mention that may come up in the future would include a show called Sky, another one called King of the Castle. And of course, they produced a very famous show from this period of children's television, Children of the Stones, which we have covered and we've talked about on several occasions because it's an outstanding example of 70s television.
Yes, things divide up a little bit where things like Children of the Stones go into the spooky, you know, scary television for children category, where this is more in the sort of action-adventure category, which was also a big deal on these adventure serials, especially from ITV.
Okay, now we know that HTV were impressed with the success of Doctor Who on the BBC in the early 70s. They were looking to try and sort of copy some of that success or some of those ideas and recreate some of the drama of shows like Mind of Evil that you've mentioned already, but also The Sea Devils, another sort of classic early 70s Doctor Who. So it was with that frame of mind that they looked to produce this new show.
I could see if they were looking at The Sea Devils that they would be thinking of sort of naval action as a possibility, because that was very much part of that show.
Absolutely.
So they look to a Doctor Who writer, Don Houghton, with the idea of producing this 6-episode serial. And they found two different directors they put on it. One was Robert Foost, best known for the abominable Dr. Fibes movies. And the other was Peter Graham Scott, who had done Danger Man and an episode of The Prisoner and also The Uneeden Line. He had really done quite a bit.
Okay, and then we get, I think quite importantly, we get the cooperation of the British Navy and the Royal Marines. And we'll talk about that briefly in our next episode, but it certainly helps give this show a very sort of real look. So the locations and the ships and the people and some of the Royal Marines they actually use as extras really sort of gives this a very sort of convincing feel, I think, Brian.
Yes, it definitely has the look of that sort of naval action, which is very, very good.
And we always like to mention our theme and title sequence. We've got, again, another one of these very sort of typically 1970s electronic musical themes. And I think another good one, actually, Brian. This time composed by Eve King and performed apparently by the Gibbs Band. I presume that's not the Bee Gees.
I don't think so, no.
And it sort of, to go along with our naval theme and this sort of element of codes and code breaking that's involved, as well as being electronic, it sort of seems to feature a sort of Morse code theme to it as well, Brian.
Yes, that did work quite well in it, I think. And that plays over the images of naval weapon systems firing and torpedo and missile launches and that sort of thing. And this was first broadcast in March of 1978. We believe maybe it was in a tea time, sort of late afternoon, early evening type of time slot. And it was also broadcast in Canada and in Germany.
Okay. I mean, as you say, Brian, that is about it for our production notes because details are a bit sketchy. So if anybody out there does know more about the setup and particularly the production of this show, we'd be delighted to hear from you either by email or on the Facebook group or join us one of those ways.
Yes, I don't think that much has been written about this one.
Okay. So we should talk about the availability of this series. In Region 2, we were fortunate enough to get a network DVD release in 2010. We've mentioned network DVD before, putting out a lot of this classic TV stuff, but usually in a very sort of basic vanilla stripped version. And it's the same here. We just get the 6 episodes and a few production photos. So no extras really, but nice to have it. And it's still available on Amazon, currently going for about £8.40 here in the UK. Not on Love Film or Netflix or iTunes, to the best of my knowledge. But as I say, fortunately enough, we do have a Region 2 DVD.
And there is no Region 1 release of this one, unfortunately. The Region 2 UK release is listed on Amazon.com for about $70 and not listed on Amazon.ca at all. So if you're looking to see this one and you're in North America, if you can watch Region 2 DVDs, I would recommend just importing it from Amazon.co.uk.
And that's going to work out cheaper, I'm sure, isn't it, Brian?
Much cheaper, yes.
As we speak, the episodes, all six episodes, are currently up on YouTube. The quality is not all that good, but they are there at the moment. As ever, these sort of licensed properties do tend to get taken down on YouTube, but you may want to go along there and certainly go and look at the title sequence, because it may bring back some memories, and it's a nice bit of combination of music and images.
Absolutely. So I think that wraps things up for the first half of our Doomball Chase discussion.
Okay, please come back and join us next time, when we're obviously going to talk a little bit more about the story. If you've not seen this show, you may be wondering where the science fiction part is, and we will get to that next time as it starts to creep in.
Absolutely, and we'll also see a familiar face show up as some of the villains come into it.
Yes, that's right, a little teaser, a familiar face coming back to a British Invaders show. And of course, we'll get to do our own reviews and recommendations for you. And as ever, you know, if you've got any more information about this show, as I said, do let us know.
Absolutely. You can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at BritishInvaders.com. We are part of the Geek Culture Network, so you can find us at thegeekculturenetwork.com. We also have a Facebook group, so you can find that by searching for British Invaders on Facebook.
We're also part of the vognetwork.com. Vog Network is internet streaming radio, the voice of geeks internet streaming radio, and you can live stream us on a Monday and a Tuesday. So you may find us there as well.
Yes, and there's a text-based live chat that you can log into to discuss things about the stream as it goes, if you like. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much, and until next time, this is Eamon in England, also signing off.